Welcome back to A People's Guide to Publishing. I'm Joe Beal, the founder and CEO of Microcosm Publishing and Distribution. I'm also the author of A People's Guide to Publishing, which distills what I've learned from selling millions of books over the past 25 years.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the editorial and marketing director here at Microcosm. We are an independent midlist publisher based in Portland, Oregon. We have 14 employees, over 650 titles in print with 20 to 40 new books per year, and we distribute thousands of titles from other publishers.
We started this podcast so that we can share what we've learned with newer publishers so that you can learn from our mistakes.
Or maybe you just want to understand the publishing industry.
This week, we are going to talk about the most exciting but most boring sounding topic in all of publishing. Intellectual property.
IP.
IP. Not the build-up to an elaborate juvenile joke.
We never make juvenile jokes around here. No. We're very serious publishers.
Yes, we are adults.
So when IP, I mean, when I talk about intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, I went there.
Yes. So
what does that actually mean?
Intellectual property is what a publisher is and does. You know, you are not a publisher without intellectual property, meaning. And that, I mean, it does make it sound so boring. So intellectual property is the substance of the work that you publish. You know, it's like the artwork, it's the words, it's the sequence of words which construct ideas, which express things that maybe have been expressed for centuries, but express them in ways that make them resonate with new and different people. You know, that is the value of intellectual property, is that you can really get things through to a new audience through various kinds of, like, packaging the books and various kinds of expressing the ideas and various kinds of putting them into different kinds of venues, retailers, platforms where people would find them.
So what is, like, a piece of intellectual property? You know, like...
Like this banner behind you. It's pink and white for those listening just on our podcast. It has our name and it says... Some shocking words like, just say no to Amazon. And it also says, independence supporting independence creates independence. You have to figure out which independence is which independence, but you can do that independently. And so another example is these boxes of books that surround us.
Oh yeah, each book or zine.
Technically speaking, even the label is a piece of intellectual property that contains the... barcode, ISBN, the carton weight, which is scannable somehow these days.
Wow.
The cover price, you know, and then similarly, this label as a composite piece of intellectual property as created by our printer, Verso Press, is also, technically speaking, their piece of intellectual property.
The printer owns the label?
Technically speaking.
That explains why sometimes we find them missing, especially on the books with swear words.
People like to hold on and protect their intellectual property.
And put it above their workstation and
celebrate how amusing they find us. That may or may not happen from time to time. But so, point being here, every book you publish is intellectual property.
Whose is it?
And this is, you know, regulated, legislated by the agreement you have with the author. So, you know, in a typical publishing agreement, we don't know what yours looks like unless you want to share them with us. Ellie's more into that than I am. She likes reading contracts.
Send me your contracts. I want to see them.
I've read a few too many contracts in my time.
I'll get there.
But typically the way it works is the author owns the right to the work perpetually, or actually, well, rather, until death plus 95 years or until... you know, thereabouts after the publication of the book. So the idea being that everything moves into public domain eventually, and you can do other tricks like, you know, you could publish a new edition of the book at various intervals to protect the intellectual property rights from falling into public domain, etc. Because if a book hasn't been published in so long, it, you know, it kind of assumes there's no value in it, and then it becomes property of the public.
So the author owns the intellectual property
of, typically speaking,
their writing, normally.
And similarly, you know, when... I mean, if you performed a work for hire, and your contract said that it belongs to the publisher, like, say, I don't know, a good example of
this. Travel book authors often have to
Yeah, that's a good example. If you're writing, like, you know, the guide to Eastern Washington or best waterfalls of Northwest Idaho, you know, you can, you know, that kind of work typically is you're paid a lump sum. It belongs to the publisher. And mostly that's just because, you know, the amount of work that they put into it is much greater than the amount of work the author puts into it. Yes, authors, I know you're going to push back against that
statement. It is a lot of work.
Yeah. It's a lot of work for all parties involved, but it's just a lot more work to handle the production of something that, you know, contains things like has to make maps and has photographs and, you know, things of that nature. And so, you know, another example would be like corporate publishing, like, mm-hmm. you know, when you have something that is like forklift manual for forklift.com or whatever, you know, like that isn't going to be work that the author owns. It's going to just be work that they get paid once for and then is, you know, essentially technical writing. So the copyright would belong to the publisher. And so,
or if a publisher has, like, in-house staff producing content, yeah, then the publisher would own that.
Typically, but that has to be specifically stipulated in the contracts, otherwise it does belong to the person writing it. You know, so you have to have, like, a boiler contract that's, like, any text you produce here belongs to your employer versus, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, and then similarly with artwork, which is kind of weirdly even more protected under intellectual property laws. So, you know, all this is to say, like, the entire purpose of a publisher is to make that intellectual property more valuable than it is if it just sat on a shelf, or if the person wrote it and it, you know, just came into existence without the publisher. If a publisher can't do that, there is no reason for that publisher to exist. That is their job. And it's similarly, it's to protect it from things like bootlegging and, you know, use that is not licensed, or, you know, we run into this all the time where, you know, like, for example, the Willamette Week, a weekly newspaper, used our logo as clip art without permission. And then when I pointed this out, that this was in fact our logo, their argument was, but I see it everywhere.
I've heard that one pretty much every time, yes.
And you're like, you know, I can see where you're coming from, but that is not a great argument. Also, aren't you in the business of intellectual property? But, you know, so we did get an apology, and, you know, the following week they printed a little bit, you know, a retraction. But, you know, it's like a book publisher, the consequences can be much more dire if you try to pull something like that, because you will often need to pulp a print run if you pull off something like that.
This is why, like, I mean, what are some situations where a book publisher might inadvertently misuse intellectual property?
So, similarly, you know, if you used a photograph that you believe was in the public domain, like, for example, like, government property is in the public domain. So if you thought a photograph belonged to NASA, you could print it on the cover of your book, you know. However, if that photograph was taken by a contractor and they owned that photograph, that is not in the public domain, you know. So you might have to destroy all of the books.
And this is one reason why plagiarism is such a big deal, and publishers need to, like, really keep an eye out for it.
Yeah. And I have a friend that is, like, beyond paranoid about plagiarism, and so goes to great lengths to make sure that there hasn't been any accidental plagiarism. But that's not really something you need to worry about so much as, you know it when you plagiarized. An author knows it when they plagiarized. You need to prevent that from happening. Like rewriting an idea as your own or summarizing, like, the pieces of an article is not the same as intellectual property theft. I mean, you could certainly do that in an unethical way where you could literally rewrite an entire article and then put your own name on it where you did none of the legwork.
We've definitely had authors, like, submit other people's work to us and be like, I'll get their permission.
Right. And you're like, this is not a great, you know. I mean, we had a book submitted to us recently that was literally, the proposal was that they wanted to reprint 14 articles by other people as a book with their name on the cover. And we were like, well, why would this exist as a book? And they were like, oh, okay, well, if you can give me enough of a budget, I can contact them all and license the work from them. And you're like, but why were you involved? Why would this be a book? Why are you... It just doesn't make any sense, you know? It's... And so, you know, fundamentally, a work of intellectual property is only functional if it's coherent, you know? If it has a purpose to... what it's bringing to the universe. You know, you don't make things, or, well, you make things for the purpose of making things.
You can print a Jane Austen novel on a scarf and people will buy it.
Yeah, and that is a great example of, like, public domain works, you know, that, like, are printed, you know, endlessly by all kinds of places. However, if you're making a new work, there needs to be a reason for that new work to exist. It needs to be, like, a contribution to culture. Otherwise, why are you doing it?
Another rookie mistake I've seen publishers make is using authors' intellectual properties outside of the stipulations of the contract.
Pretty common, yeah.
Like, yeah. Say you have a bunch of short story collections, and as somebody recently contacted us and wanted to create a volume that was took stories from various of the short story collections, we looked at our contracts with the authors, and, you know, our contracts were, like, an email with 4 points, but still it stipulated, like, we can sell your story as for translation as part of this volume, but not as an individual story. So we had to contact all the authors individually, get their permission, set new terms, like, you know, make sure there was new language agreed upon. They all said yes. Right. But if we hadn't done that, you know, they could rightly have...
Right. I mean, it can revoke the agreements you have, you know. And so, you know, you just... And, it, you know, and it's, again, like we talked about in the contracts episode, you really want to... Just everybody needs to feel like they're getting a fair deal, you know, and they, you don't want your authors to be, well, sometimes your author will be surprised because they won't read or understand the agreement, but you don't want your author to be surprised when you go outside the bounds of the agreement.
So, like, say you have a book that's illustrated or a comic book, can you print that art on a mug, for instance?
I mean, you could if you had that stipulated in the agreement, or you could. I mean, and a lot of times, most of the time, let's even say, if you made a comic book and you said, oh, mugs would be cool, let's consider that, you would have to go back, you'd go back to the contract and you'd say, okay, do we have permission for, you know, like a blanket sidelines contract? Do we have, you know, we saw a contract the other day that had a blanket terms for all other kinds of licensing, and then that had a stipulated payout royalty. And you're like, wow, that's, like, that's wild, you know? I mean, I wouldn't agree to that. But if you don't have something like that, you would have to go back to, or you could have a mugs one singularly if you foresaw the need for this before you made the contract. Otherwise, you would need to go back to the artist and say, hey, would it be cool if we made mugs? What's a fair agreement for those mugs?
Are we using the cover to promote the book with that?
Yeah, right. I mean, but if you're printing a separate commercial item,
right,
that's for sale, it's a little different. Mm-hmm. And so you would then need to go back to the artist and say, would it be cool if we licensed this to print mugs? It's a very bad idea to make those mugs without talking to the artist first if you don't have the agreements. And normally the artist will say, cool, yeah, you can do that, just send me some mugs, you know, and that's that easy. Whereas it really goes south if you make them, the artist is shocked by this, you know. And sometimes you'll have somebody that's surprised because they don't read or think about or understand the contract before they agree. But you don't ever want a circumstance where somebody is shocked or upset because you violated the contract.
And just, like, when you are coming to, like, separate agreements outside the contract, it's a really good idea to make sure, even if you talk about it on the phone or in person, like, make sure you spell it out in an email and they write back and say they agree, because then everyone's memory, you know, is not as good as having it in writing.
Yeah, and this is, we run into this all the time where people are like, the way I remember it is, and you're like, well, the agreement is this, so this is why we have the agreement, is so we're not relying upon your memory. often years after the fact.
Yeah, we've literally had people like write to us and be like, I never gave you permission to do this. And like Joe goes through his file and finds the letter that they sent where they were like, I'm so excited that you're doing this. Please keep doing this.
Yeah.
And yeah, we all forget.
And you know, and it's, yeah, maybe you don't express yourself in the way that you intended to. And so, yeah, it is, I mean, I guess, once again, the need for clear communication, trust, and respect.
And keeping all of the documentation.
Until next week.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at Microcosm.
On Facebook at Microcosm Publishing.
On Instagram at Microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.